Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Tech Can't Save Us. As usual, I'm one of your co-hosts, Paul David.
I'm William Gazvipi.
And I'm Rebecca Hedman. And on today's episode, we'll be taking a look at the month of October.
It was a busy, busy month. If you're listening via Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please do go ahead and share a rating. As always, we appreciate your support, and this helps us know that we're continuing to reach the right folks. So thank you for that.
It's a great pod today. We've got a look at the reputation of crypto, or the lack of reputation of crypto, after the ongoing FTX scandal and the trial and some of the many revelations that have been coming out of that. Some real popcorn moments if you're into tech and crypto, which I am. And then we're going to have a look at the reviewing X after a year of Elon Musk's leadership. Again, or lack thereof. And closing the show with a fun game of Who Said That, which we'll explain a little later on, but you can imagine as a bit of a fun party game. Cool. Let's jump straight into the first topic of the pod, which is the trial of Sam Bankman-Fried. For those of you who don't know, this is the 31-year-old founder of FTX, the blockchain exchange where you bought and sold cryptocurrency. Basically, it was one of the big two. Every Wall Street founder, insider on the world of crypto and Web3 was like, this is going to be one of the driving platforms of the Web3, the way that like Google was of Web2. So when they declared bankruptcy and went under, it was a real surprise to investors, crypto folk around the world. And as it came out, basically, it was just being run like an absolute casino. This guy's a total cowboy, and he had been laundering money. He had just lied about how much money was on hand. So obviously the big part of an exchange is like, say, more than half of the people who have holdings in cryptocurrency ask for money in exchange for their funds. You have to, you know, like a bank, you have to have the money on hand, the cash on hand to pay them. And it just turned out he just straight up lied. He was just like, oh yeah, we got like billions in the bank. And he, like, I think they found out he had like 20 million or something in operating cash, which is like just batshit. It's like he had like 1% of the cash on hand he needed to. Just some of the stuff that's been coming out in the trial. Basically, all of his former friends, staff, and business colleagues have testified that he took money from the exchange for his own purposes, while his team has been going with a PR campaign to sort of undermine their claims. He's defending himself personally on the stump, which is never a good sign. I should say this is all allegedly. We are not judge, jury, and executioner here at Tech Can't Save Us, but it very much looks at the moment like he did all of these things and is going to be going to jail for quite a long time. The dude lived in the Bahamas for tax reasons, which is never, never a good sign. So yeah, what do you guys think about this trial in terms of, one, enjoying it and all of the mad shit that's come out? And then two, on the more serious note, like, what does this kind of mean for the reputation of crypto and Web3? Is it ever going to get back to being the hot topic that it was, you know, maybe a year, 2 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, the optics are not good. Let's put it that way. They're suboptimal. It's unfortunate, but people like latch on to those little bits of like, oh, he was got this luxury box, you know, on like other people's money, the company's money. And, you know, for someone who put themselves out there so much to be the face of crypto, for this to happen, it's a bit of a bummer for folks who are in that industry working really hard to, well, I think you've said this before, like, you know, the adults are increasingly in the room in crypto, and we had that first wave. So you got to feel bad for those folks who are working really hard to professionalize that sector. So yeah, I think it'll initially take a tough hit, but I think once people get past that, they'll be able to see like there is value in the sector. There's huge implications for what it can do for folks. I appreciate that like this also happens in other industries. Like, let's talk about finance. Let's talk about the crash of 2008, things like that. So I think people are smart enough to see the forest for the trees, but also they're reactionary and they're going to react to this like, oh, it's another crypto scandal, you know? So I think a bit of both there.
Yeah, I think people forget how much the Web 2 era was had very similar snake oil salespeople. You just forget about them because it's been a while. And just to put a fine point on, like, we work with a Web 3 accelerator called Block Dojo, which, you know, is very much funding the people that really are trying to use Web 3 and what blockchain technology offers you as an adult to like solve real world problems. And like, quite often the conversation we have with those founders, they're just like, oh yeah, I just don't tell people it's built on blockchain because it's become such a dirty word that people don't trust it. And I'm just like, oh, it's technology. Like, that's how much stuff like this affects genuine entrepreneurs trying to use the tech, you know, in a positive way. Rebecca, what was your defining moment from this trial?
I think just taking a look here at this account of when the trial went to court last Monday and the jury was given a separate spreadsheet of the celebrity sponsorship deals. Now, I know we've seen a lot of regulation around celebrity endorsement, and we've had not similar, but instances where we've seen like the Fyre Festival, where we all know what happened with that. You know, we have people like Anna Delvey. And again, we have here $205 million for the FTX Arena in Miami, $150 million to Major League Baseball, $28.5 million to Stephen Curry. I mean, this is just like red flags all over. Why was no one picking up that, hey, something must be wrong here? And these celebrities, like, they need to be regulated with what they promote, what they endorse, and what they tell people, hey, go and spend your hard-earned cash doing. So I think that's what really flags to me, because there was quite a few levels here where there should have been red flags like raised. And yet again, this was missed. And as you've said, Will, it's put a dampener on crypto. It's put a dampener on the average consumer's opinion of blockchain, Web3, and, you know, crypto as a whole. So
and lost a lot of people a lot of money. Like, yeah. There isn't really a responsible way to do crypto. It's just, like, and I say this as someone who trades in it, like, it's basically just gambling, like, in many aspects. It's a slightly more risky version of the stock market. And there are people that know what's doing, and their guesses are more often right than wrong, but they are still guesses. But a lot of people who were seriously invested in trading crypto had a lot of money in stuff like Ethereum, which is relatively stable and what's known as a stable coin. And because of this guy, you know, like, their money, like, it just disappears, or they got bought by, was it Binance, I think, who ended up purchasing the rights to, like, FTX and stuff to sort of sweep up the time. But it's like a lot of real people's money that are, like, the ramifications. Like, it's funny to look at $1.13 billion of celebrity endorsements and, you know, how much of a ridiculous human being this guy was. But, like, at the end of the day, it is real human beings that have probably really got into this world, invested their money, and thought that they were going to, like, be onto a winner and be one of those crypto millionaires. And then, you know, all of their cash is gone for reasons that aren't really fair.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting to see comments from Sheila Warren, as the CEO of the Crypto Council for Innovation. So, you know, they're a body advocating for regulation of the crypto industry. And she just, like, rejected the idea that all of crypto is on trial, said it was ludicrous, mentioned that the vast majority of what happened here was, and I love this quote, good old-fashioned, old-timey fraud, which is, like, you know, to the point. It's like, okay, let's not over-extrapolate what's happening here. This was another case of bad guy allegedly does bad things. The real problem was, like, the cult of celebrity that, Rebecca, you mentioned this, around the whole thing, and what Sam Bankman-Fried tried to build in terms of, like, his own profile, and then also with the celebrity endorsements and stuff like that. So I appreciate that on two levels. One, it's just bringing balance to this particular instance, but also it's an example, I think, of the larger crypto industry starting to regulate and police itself and kind of contextualize things and say, hey, this is one hopefully isolated incident. I'm sure there's other specific incidents, but also, you know, there's a bigger industry out there. It's growing. It's getting its legs under itself. And yeah, I just appreciated that frame.
No, 100%. And like Coinbase and Binance, which you probably haven't heard of unless you trade crypto, are run like very dull exchanges. Like, they live within their own means. They're very scared of over leveraging themselves. The reason you've heard of this guy is because he was taking all of the money that he had on hand and using it to build a cult of celebrity. So it's like he's the loudest asshole in the room. And that's why you think of him and you think of crypto. But actually, most of the folk on these other platforms are running pretty responsible ships. Binance and Coinbase are probably no more cowboy than the average hedge fund or like thing that's going on in the stock exchange. They need regulation to guarantee that and stop this from getting to the point it has, where it's like a multi-billion-dollar issue. But they are ultimately, majority of the time, adult professional operations.
Yeah, I also appreciated the comments from Armin Wong, the former head of public policy at Coinbase and a former SEC regulator, that essentially there's two courts. There's the court of law, and that's, you know, sort of this is a focused individual thing, and then there's the court of public opinion. So obviously crypto is going to take a hit in the court of public opinion, given how nascent it is as a sector. But in the court of law, this is, as was mentioned, good old-fashioned, old-timey fraud, and that's sort of the thing to focus on and not over-extrapolate here.
Definitely love having that as a quote. Good old-fashioned, old-timey fraud. Like, what? Hell yeah.
That's probably a good opportunity to take us to the second topic. What's happened
speaking
here?
Of fraud.
Well, speaking of nice, good one-liners, which this platform is known for. But yeah, a year of Twitter under Elon Musk. So it's officially been a year since Elon took over Twitter, and we want to talk about some of the key stats revealed by mobile research firm Aptopia in a new report about the app that kind of underscore how things have gone over the past year. So according to Aptopia, they've lost approximately 13% of their daily active users after the sudden sudden rebound, there was a around 2,000% spike in negative daily app reviews, according to Adam Blacker, who's Eptopia's director of content communications. The keywords logo and bluebird specifically appeared as top 10 keywords left in user reviews, each with negative sentiments attached to them. Eptopia also reported that about only 10% of X users or Twitter users have ever tried Threads, which was their attempt to get under some of the stuff that's going on over at Instagram. And the content of the site dramatically changed too. So they're replacing the blue ticks with a paid scheme. There's a massive rise in misinformation and hate speech across the platform, which I think is the saddest thing. It was already a bad place for women, non-binary folks, people of color, all that stuff. At the end of 2022, analysts from the Center for Countering Digital Hate alleged that the number of tweets containing the N-word had tripled since Musk's takeover. Much of this is due to the wave of redundancies and firings that happened last year. You probably saw those terrible photos of people camped out, you know, at Twitter headquarters, sleeping at their desks because of Musk's many new changes. So I guess the question for us is, what do we think is the future of this platform, given all this damning information about how the first year has gone?
It's really quite scary, because actually, in the grand scheme of things, this could have been something great. Elon Musk, one thing about him, even though his execution is just always bad, the ideas are there, the concepts are there. And I think just somewhere in between what could have been and what is, he's just got really lost. And that's very sad to see. But I really believe these stats, because I fall into these categories. I have stopped using Twitter X. We as an agency have dramatically reduced
our
presence.
Advise our clients not to fucking bother anymore, like, right. Genuinely, like that, like what more damning indictment could you say than, yeah, when people ask us, should we be on this, we're a digital marketing agency, and we go no.
Yeah. It's at the bottom of our recommendations, yeah, when we are speaking to clients. So I think from even on an agency level, we're seeing the change in like a social strategy and the way that Twitter used to be a big part of that. It used to be one of your go-tos, especially for journalism.
Non-profits.
Exactly. So I think it's quite sad to see, but 100%, I think we will end up losing Twitter, losing X completely to sort of a bunch of bullies and bad guys. Because at present, it's just, yeah, it's just a pool of like hot mess. So yeah, that's my opinion on X.
It's sad because like, there's two strands of this, one of which is very entertaining, which is how fucking stupid Elon Musk has been in buying a platform that's never been profitable, only has brand recognition and goodwill, and then spending the entire year that he's run there destroying both of those things. So that's funny, and I don't like Elon Musk, so it's good to see him fuck up. On the bad side of things, Twitter is like a public utility. It just is. Like, it's where most journalists and policymakers, especially in the US, get their information. And some of the stuff that in the early history of the app it did, which was incredible, is like, you know, you chat to anyone who's involved in like the Arab Spring, and Twitter was how you reported on it. It's how you understood the truth and the facts of what was actually going on versus the propaganda of all the sides involved, because you had real on the ground reports of what was happening. And Twitter actively encouraged that verified content on the ground. The algorithm changes that Musk has made to make it more like TikTok does just mean that for something like recent, like the Israel-Gaza conflict, misinformation and propaganda has spread rampantly. It really made the situation worse and poured petrol on the fire. So it's like, it's funny that Elon Musk has been shown to be an asshole, but this is a genuine part of the digital ecosystem and sort of status quo for the last 15 years, love it or hate it. And with this being gone, it's like, well, what's left? Like, no one's using Threads. Instagram is just not that platform. Does LinkedIn step into the void? Facebook is still a shit show. Like, TikTok is just to get you addicted to 30-second videos. There isn't that platform that's even pretending to give you the news anymore or like educate you. It's sad. And one of the things I think Twitter was so unprofitable for so long is because they actually really took that seriously. Like, they had the largest moderation teams, the largest like anti-hate speech teams of any social platform. They realized the problem was like almost impossible to solve, but they were genuinely trying. And since they've gone, you know, you see what it is now versus what it was before. And yeah, I mean, like, it's not a product anymore that anyone uses except for nutters. So yeah, it's a sad day, really. And I agree with you. I don't think it'll be around in a year. They announced like literally today, they're partnering up with Google Ads. In the future, you'll be able to run a Google ad placement on Twitter using Google ad data. That's the only thing I could see saving them, is if they essentially sell it to Google. Google have never managed to successfully create a social media platform. just sell it to Google. I think that's the best chance they have, and they'd do that at a massively reduced rate.
And I guess like the existing Twitter ads framework they had wasn't very successful, or they weren't really...
They have no data about the people using it. Like that, the thing Facebook had is like what pages you liked, what groups you liked, how you engage with stuff. Twitter, it just had your tweets.
Yeah.
And quite often, for like literally 95% of users on Twitter, they just retweet stuff. They don't really tweet original content.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to guess what you're into from the stuff that you're retweeting. And most of those are funny memes and one-liners. So it just never offered you the targeting that a truly powerful platform did, like Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, where they have like 600 data points on its users to go after.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like another unfortunate case of, well, the richest man in the world who happens to be this, I don't know what you call it, eccentric.
Overgrown child.
Yeah, overgrown child, eccentric, overpaid white man from South Africa whose family comes from questionable historical wealth, just kind of acting a fool because he can, because he has the bandwidth and the pockets to do that. I listened to an interesting podcast that featured Walter Isaacson, who's his biographer, did Steve Jobs' biography, so on and so forth, who followed Musk around for the year preceding the Twitter buyout and basically was shocked by it himself as the person who was, you know, I guess Musk like called him to Austin and just let him know that he was going to do this. And it's just an example of like Isaacson talks about this, like he's a man who plays life like a video game. He actually thinks of it as like, first of all, I think he believes that we live in a simulation, which is a whole other conversation. But believing that is true, he sort of acts as if it's a video game, and only someone who would walk into Twitter headquarters carrying an actual kitchen sink on the day that he purchased them would do such a thing. You know what I mean? So I think it's like, as we see this across the economy, and Sam Bankman-Fried's another example of that, is like wealth and power kind of run amok. And it's unfortunate that a lot of folks in the San Francisco community who have been unemployed or made unemployed, made redundant by this. It's sad. On the other hand, I think it's interesting to watch them take up the free speech argument and take what's not really like an original economic argument of like, oh, there's this bloated staff and we have to go in there and it's a loss-making company and stuff like that. And I think he's potentially going to regret like some of those changes, as we've already seen from what's happened on the platform. But yeah, it's just kind of sad to see, you know, that all play out like that.
I do think that point around tech founders and godlike CEOs is a really key and scary one. Because like, I think Mark Zuckerberg has made as many massive missteps, and it's just from assuming that he's the smartest person in the room and not listening to anything that disagrees with his worldview. This is how you end up with a social platform that prioritizes hate speech in its algorithm, because you just think everyone who tells you you need to censor your platform is a dumbass and no one's as smart as you are. And like, I do think it's a consistent thing we see with, not, I mean, it's more apparent with tech founders because we all use those platforms like they're almost like public utilities. But it is just like that CEO mentality of like, you're right until you're wrong. And then when you're wrong, you're such a forceful my way or the highway. You can cause so much damage to your company and the users of it in such a short space of time because you just don't listen to anyone telling you, dude, that's not a good idea. The only thing Twitter has is its net brand name. Why would we rename to X? You just think this is cool and no one's thought of it. You just want an idea that no one's come up with. This isn't a good idea. It's just an idea.
And failing them realizing what they're doing or having accountability or responsibility, there should be some regulation. And I know we do a lot of regulation talk, but I think it's hard when you have this privately owned situation and these CEOs who have nobody to actually hold them accountable. And that's where I think maybe government bodies could step in. We've got here the Center for Countering Digital Hate, who actually were monitoring the tweets that had tripled since Musk's takeover, the tweets containing the N-word since Musk's takeover. And I wonder how many organizations of that magnitude are getting involved, who are monitoring what's going on Twitter, and how much power do they have? You know, when they publish stats like this, most companies would be issuing PR statements, looking to try and change. And obviously those things are not happening at X. So I wonder, where do we go with regulation after this point? What can we do to regulate these kind of platforms further? Is it possible? Is it just too vast? I mean, if the staff are being made redundant and fired, you know, from the inside, how can any outside bodies have any control over anything going on in X?
Yeah, it's an unfortunate one because, like, as we'll mention, like the platform has grown to a size where it's basically a public utility, right?
Yeah.
So then that should maybe be the trigger point for government to step in and say, hey, this is now a place where people get their news, and
it,
a place
it should
where
be like a percentage of your population. And like, when it hits like 5-10% of your population are using a platform, there should just be way more stringent regulation.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. I mean, I think to take a quote from Alex Gunn, who's a lecturer in marketing at the Alliance Manchester Business School, and I think Musk depended on this, is the fact that this network lock-in effect, and basically how the platform grew to a certain size. And that's obviously the most valuable aspect of social media platforms. So that herd effect allowed Twitter to basically stay afloat even after all the missteps and Musk's takeover. They saw membership shrink somewhat, but the exodus never hit a critical mass so that, you know, he could take maybe a never once profitable company to potentially being profitable without a huge hit in membership. But that piece, I think, is really important, because once you see a company that has that sort of network lock-in effect, like, when is it an opportunity for government to step in and say, hey, this is affecting elections, this is affecting public perception, public discourse. And yeah, I mean, I think that point about, like, who's using it, how many folks in your population are using it is an interesting one.
And the downside is, like, yeah, journalism is worse now. Like, I mean, like,
so much worse.
Don't get me wrong, there's other stuff there in terms of, like, the business model we've created where journalists need to get their hot takes from Twitter, but ultimately now they have nothing, and it's like you just write the article with less first-hand accountability. And as well, like we said, there were many thriving communities that used Twitter really well. Like it was traditionally the go-to social channel for most nonprofits. That's where you got your fundraising, that's where you got your attention and your awareness. And so yeah, it's funny that Elon Musk is the one to do it, because I think he's an asshole, but like, it's a real shame for the world of social media now that it's like, oh, okay, well, I'm on Instagram, I'm on TikTok, or I'm on Facebook. And I think all three of those are objectively worse platforms than Twitter was when it was regulated, at least half decently. LinkedIn is like genuinely probably the only one I use now on a day-to-day basis, and the only reason it's better is because you have to verify your identity to be on it, so people aren't assholes on it. They're bullshy, which is fine because that's social media, but they're never going to use the n-word because it's tied to their employment history. It just makes people act like real human beings. So you know, it's a sad day overall. I will miss it once it's gone.
Yeah, a former friend that I've since unfollowed on all platforms, but who's a journalist at a major publication, I won't name names, but it was really sad to kind of watch him basically be sort of taken away in a sense by the pull of like Twitter and needing to be sensational, and basically has gone sort of like somewhat right wing since the George Floyd protests in 2020, and just starts taking these positions to get likes and follows and retweets and stuff like that. And it's it was really unfortunate to see, and had a very tough come to Jesus conversation with him about like, man, this is not going to play well, and basically warned him. And then, you know, he posted some stuff on Twitter that got him a lot of flack, almost got him fired from his job. And yeah, that's anecdata, but you extrapolate that out to hundreds of other journalists, and you can really see the pull that's having on a profession like journalism towards, okay, what's hot, what's sensational, what's not, what's like deep and thoughtful. So it's really sad to see that.
How much worse is that going to be now those journalists have TikTok as their primary platform? Mm. Like, yeah. Jesus, I've got to make a 30-second video about the Israel-Gaza conflict. Like, you can't do that in 30 seconds. Like, you can't do that in 30 minutes.
Yeah, and it's connected to, like, larger issues of, like, consolidation of media companies and things like that, obviously. And, like, you know, these folks need to be good journalists, but at the same time help the company turn a profit, you know? And,
there's no money for fact-checking anymore. Most publications have gone better to just pay X amount in lawsuits that we'd get something wrong a year than it is to just do good journalism. Twitter was sort of, like, a symptom rather than, like, the underlying disease, but... Yeah,
I definitely think that's an issue. The publications or the big companies actually encouraging these people to sensationalize, you know, hate speech or anything strange or wild.
The truth is normally boring.
The truth is,
it doesn't
yeah.
play well on social. It's
sex sells, as they say.
It's like, look, do you want to sit down for 20 minutes and I'll explain to you this really niche thing of the economy? No? Do you just want me to tell you that it's the fault of some minority? Like, sweet.
Yeah.
That's what social media, like, that's the bargain of fucking social media, unfortunately.
I remember that Twitter expanded their number of characters you could put on, so I wonder if there's like any kind of counter analysis there in terms of like, did the discussion get more thoughtful when people could suddenly post more, or was just opportunity to be more racist in an extended diatribe? I'm very curious.
The Center for Countering Digital Hate, I bet that's only like 5% of the juicy stats they have.
Yeah.
And I would love to know how it compares to other platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, kind of I would, but then it would put you off, isn't it, when you know the deep levels of the data behind the other platforms? You'd probably try and stray away from them. Let's close by giving our opinions on what we think might happen to X over the next year. Who thinks it's going to stay? Who thinks it's going to go?
I think it's going under.
Really?
Yeah. So I think the only way it could stay is if it gets essentially, it becomes a proxy of Google.
Yeah.
Because Google have much better data, and if they sync their systems up with Twitter, Twitter would actually suddenly become a very powerful social media platform because you could use all of Google. So if I know that William has... I'm William. Oh my God, I'm referring in the fourth person.
Wow.
Let's try that again.
I was like, William, there's another.
If I know Rebecca's search history and I can see that she's in the mood for brunch because she's looking at brunches, you know, near me, and I can see her geographical data on Google, that's in some of the most powerful. That's why Google's so powerful and makes so much money in its ads. I can then follow you around on Twitter with an ad for lovely restaurants, bottomless brunch.
Yeah.
Bring the girls. I'm assuming you love a boozy brunch with the girls.
I do.
I know this because I ask you what you've been up to on your weekend each
Stop
week.
It. Stop it, Will. You enjoy a boozy brunch with the girls.
I do enjoy Don't a boozy brunch with the girls.
Don't we are.
But yeah, that's the only way I can see it surviving is that announcement I saw today about Google. But if not, if it's carried on run as it is, I think it will be gone in 6 months, let alone a year.
Yeah, wow.
I think it'll hang in there. I think that herd network effect, lock-in effect is incredibly powerful. I think Musk saw that going into the purchase and knew that, is probably giving him more credit than he's due, but like kind of knew that they could survive, it could survive those changes, you know, even if they were slightly disastrous in the short term. The ads thing with Google, I think, is another indicator that they're kind of, you know, seeing the forest for the trees, and this is the second time I'm using that metaphor in this podcast, but, you know, the ads thing shows that they're moving in the right direction. And yeah, I just think it's such a brand, it's such a, you know, established name at this point that like the people who matter, quote unquote, are on Twitter and they're going to, you know, continue to use it. I think these Twitter sort of spinoffs that you're seeing that haven't really been successful are examples of how difficult it is, Mastodon, you know, being one example, to get underneath that lock-in effect. So I think in some shape or form, it will persist, especially if they tighten up what they're doing with their ads.
Reddit's usership is up. It's a little fun factoid. It's a lot of people have gone to Reddit.
Yeah, I feel like Reddit is a different platform. Like it's I don't know. It's just, to me, it strikes as more like internet nerds who like are really care. Actually, I think it's kind of the opposite in a way. Like actually care about like deep, you know, information discovery and like truth. And I think the moderation on there is like, you know, I think there's like
the moderation's quite tight on there, man.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the subreddit, but yeah.
Yeah.
You're seeing like more Twitter-esque subreddits, which is interesting.
Okay.
Like they.
Okay.
Like I think there is a play there by Reddit to like try and be, because that's another one that's like a lot, like there's, it's not going anywhere and is actually profitable, so that has some chance of picking it up. But yeah, I mean it's different folk, you're going there for different hits.
Yeah, I mean I think there's a whole piece around like how much of it is Twitter/X and how much of it is us, and I think there's like a broad swath of humanity, unfortunately, that likes the kind of like semi-anonymous public square, just like trashing people and, you know, groups that are already already under the thumb of discrimination. So yeah, I mean there's an unfortunate piece there of like,
how much of this is wishful thinking.
Yeah, like just kind of, I don't know, garbage in, garbage out, like just kind of like people, a lot of people have garbage opinions and they want a place to put them.
A garbage platform.
I mean, let's be real, I mean like you could say the same about Facebook as well. You know, they're just products of the lives that many of us are living.
Or our social media manager. Yeah, what's your thoughts?
I think it will drag out a little bit. X. I think Elon will do all he can to try and keep it together and going, but I think the usership will definitely decrease significantly more. And I'm not sure if Google will go the full way with X. I don't know. I can't see it happening, but it would be the only way to revive them. I think a year from now, probably we'll be looking at X wiltering away, going completely. I'm not advising any clients to use it. I'm not using it for any clients, for us, our agency. So yeah, just on that front alone, it's a huge red flag, because think about all the social media platforms that we used to use that we've stopped using, and that's sad to see that X has gone that way and become just another one of those used to be's.
Next Halloween, we're going to check in and see who's
predicted. Yeah, let's do that. I love that. Maybe so, round us off on a lighter note.
Let's do that. Let's bring the vibe up a little bit. So we're going to play a little game. I'm going to ask you two, you're in the hot seat right now. The game's called Who Said That? I'm going to share a few statements and I'm going to ask you both to tell the audience what you think the news article was part of. Everyone clear?
The news article was...
a part of. Where did it come from?
Oh, what the source is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So like the news source?
The news source. I will tell you the journalist. So if you know the journalist, you might realize.
So you're guessing the publication.
Okay.
Guessing the publication.
Got it.
So number one, there are more regulation on sandwich shops than there are on beep companies. And this is from Stuart Russell.
I heard this one.
I'm going to say TechCrunch.
I'm going to say Wired.
You're both wrong.
Happens a lot.
Can I have a second chance at The Economist?
Ooh, not your clothes.
Financial Times?
No. Sorry. You're going the wrong way. Huh.
Should I go for it.
The Guardian.
I mean, I do
read The Guardian a lot, and yeah. I probably skim past it.
I'm going to do a reveal. It was actually talking about AI companies.
There are more regulations on sandwich shops than there are on AI companies.
I mean, this was an advocate for regulation, so
we love regulation.
One of our guys.
We
are a regulation stand podcast. Other co-authors of the document include Jeffrey Hinton, Yoshua Bengio, and two of the three godfathers of AI.
Godfathers of AI, I love that.
Yeah, I was going to say, what a title.
That should be the name of the podcast.
Can we get Timnit Gebru as a godmother of AI? Because I feel like she gets overlooked a lot when I'm talking about these godfathers.
I'm loving this. This is a wonderful outline you put together. Who won the ACM Turing Award, the computer science equivalent of the Nobel Prize, in 2018 for their work on AI.
Nice one.
Fair play. I mean, yeah. That's why not? I think we all agree with that. There should be more regulation on AI companies and sandwich shops.
Wow, that's scary.
Oh, God.
Okay, let's move on to number two. This month, Amazon announced it's expanding its delivery service to the UK and Italy and growing its service in the US.
It's got to be drone. No?
Any guesses, Will?
Yeah, drone delivery service, surely.
You're both right. It is.
Yeah, get in. Blank. Then what's the publication, do we reckon?
Seems pretty general, I don't
Times?
Know.
Times? Metro?
New York Times?
The Guardian again.
God
Guardian
damn it!
I didn't think you'd have two Guardians in a row, but yeah.
Oh man, if it's
just for you can see the redacted, so you can tell this is actually, she's done the work here.
It's going to be
so
incredible if this is a triple fake and the third one's Guardian.
Yeah,
as well.
I mean, don't do that to us.
Tinder now lets beep recommend matches.
Artificial intelligence?
Is it close friends or something like that, or
I think it always let you. I'm basing this off of like 6 years ago when I last used it. But I thought you could always suggest someone.
I mean, if it could, my dating history would be a lot different than it is. I don't remember that feature.
Is the blank out the same amount of letters that is in the blanked out phrase?
Let me just double check.
Because if it is, then yeah.
No, it's not.
Okay, no, it's
yeah,
not.
I don't think so. Oh, see another.
You're basically right anyway. Do you want to guess the actual phrase?
Or family members?
Very close.
I got nothing other than family members.
Connections? I don't know. Like
connections?
Yeah, I don't know.
Connections?
No.
Now let's...
I'm just saying, that would be...
Ex-partners? That would be interesting.
That would be horrible. Jeez, can you
that
imagine?
Is a very different...
Throw a little spanner in the works.
Recommendation.
That would be dreadful. It's loved ones.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah, you were both on the right track. And you want to guess the publication?
I mean, I have to go Guardian after no. Damn it.
High Times.
No.
Damn it. Economist?
No, but you suggested this the first time.
TechCrunch.
No.
Wired.
Oh, no, maybe you didn't suggest it. The Verge. Shout out.
The Verge. I do like some Verge.
Yeah. Give us the full article.
Let's get this one up.
Just unredacting it from our Google Doc.
It says, Tinder now lets loved ones recommend matches. Tinder's new matchmaker feature lets users invite their loved ones, regardless of whether they have a Tinder profile or not, to view and recommend potential matches. Essentially integrated a friend test into the dating app. Profiles liked by matchmakers will be marked as a recommendation, but the Tinder user who invited them still has the final say on who officially to like in the app. Tinder says that profiles marked as nope by matchmakers won't change.
That's really interesting. I think it's a brilliant move on their part from a like sort of user engagement standpoint. Because like,
how did they not wait until like Mother's Day to do that? Yeah. That would, come on.
Oh. I mean, they save their users a lot of trouble for not launching on that day. Like, put it that way. Also, I think just like as a single person, you're used to people like, oh, give me your phone and like looking at matches and like doing that anyway. You know, so why not integrate it into the service?
I cannot tell you the amount of times I've been in the pub and the one single person there is like, oh, get up one of your dating profiles. This would be so hilarious.
Yeah.
It's
a nightmare.
I think they should maybe put limits on there as well, because as somebody who is very invested in my friends and family's love life, I need to be stopped. Otherwise, I'll be constantly...
It would be great if you like scale the hierarchy of like, no, Rebecca's like, take what she says on board. But like, she's not. Yeah. like my Nana, like she's a 10. Yeah. Like, if Nana says no, I'm out.
Oh, God. Well,
yeah. Great game. Enjoyed that.
That was a good one.
You guys did
that's a fun one.
Terribly.
Yeah. To be expected.
That's a great place to call it a day. Thanks so much, folks, as always. Please, if you can, continue to support and share with your network. Make sure if you're listening to this on Spotify or Apple, please hit subscribe to stay in the loop. If you're watching it on YouTube, give us a like, subscribe to our channel. Really appreciate it. It really helps us. One good deed for the day, please do that.
Before we head off, just to let you know that you are able to subscribe to our monthly newsletter via the link in our homepage, which is www.literalhumans.com. We provide information on funding opportunities, tech job openings, and all that good stuff. So make sure to subscribe.
Awesome. See you next week, team.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.